Anne Scully, good morning.
Good morning.
You're thinking of going on holiday for yourself, are you?
I am, on a lengthy holiday this time, Damien, yes. I'm retiring at the, well, practically at the end of the month.
Okay. And you're retiring from your managerial role in the Waterford Rape and Sexual Abuse Centre. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. We'll do a little bit for social media as well, if you want, if that's okay. Okay. Nice to give publicity to a very, very important centre. Just explain to us, please, what is the centre and where it is and kind of who works there or how does it operate?
The centre is, well, our physical address is on the Waterside. It's 2A Waterside. There's various ways of getting in touch with us, I suppose, which are available on our website. But essentially, it provides counselling and support for anybody really who's been affected by sexual abuse or sexual violence. So obviously, that's the survivors and victims themselves. It's also, though, their family and friends who can also be often be left feeling helpless and not knowing how to help or what to say. So our services, I suppose, take various forms. The mainstay of it really would be we have a face-to-face counselling service where people come for as long as they feel they need to. We don't give a set number of sessions, and it's free and it's confidential. Then we also offer accompaniment services. So we have a team of trained volunteers who provide psychological support to anybody who's attending the sexual assault treatment unit, which is based here in Waterford, it's University Hospital Waterford these days. And they're there essentially to be whatever support the victim and their families need at a very, very difficult time in their lives. We also, where we can, will accompany people if they're going to the Gardaí to make a statement or if they're going to court to attend a trial. And we obviously have a very good relationship with the Gardaí and with any of the agencies. We work closely, obviously, with a lot of agencies. We also then campaign. We work to try and prevent sexual violence, to make people aware of it, aware of the impacts and effects and the dynamics of it. And we campaign for changes to policy or law. And that's in conjunction with Rape Crisis Ireland, which is an umbrella body of which we're a member. And so we have an effect at a national level as well.
How do you get funding and how many people are working within the centre, full or part time?
Okay. Our main source of funding is it's COON, which is a new agency that has been established within the Department of Justice. That really, I suppose, is still in its infancy. It's only been in existence for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. So that would be our main source of funding. Obviously, we have people who very generously fundraise and donate to us as well, which we're always very grateful for. So we have a team of trained therapists, and currently there are six who work varying hours, but they're all part-time. We have an administrator and we have a volunteer coordinator. So we also have a team then of approximately 20 volunteers who go through an extensive training programme in order to be able to provide support and accompaniment.
You have been working at the centre for 30 years
mm-hmm.
and you've been manager for the last 16.
Yeah.
How and why did you get involved originally?
I had always had an interest, I suppose, in women's rights. And the women's movement was still, I suppose, fairly young in Ireland at that point. Mm. So I worked in Australia for a time and worked for an organisation called Victims of Crime. So that was victims of anything from burglary through to the families of murder victims. And that came home then and decided that I wanted to continue doing something in that area. So I joined the centre as a volunteer at that point and trained as a counsellor with them. And then the position of administrator came up. And I took that on, so I was administrator and therapist there then. And then the position of manager came up, so I applied for that back in the late 2000s and moved into that position.
How has it been?
It has been, there's so many words you could apply to it. It has been, it's been fantastic. It has been heart-wrenching. It has been very challenging. And it has also been, I would say, one of the, if not the best experiences of my life. It's been very hard to decide, to make the decision to leave, but it's just the right time for me now. But I've gotten to know so many remarkable people, both the people who work there, the people who volunteer for us. We obviously also have a board of trustees and they're all voluntary as well. the people we come in contact with, but most of all, Damien, I'd say the survivors themselves. They're just, their courage, their tenacity, and the strength that they have, even though they might not see any of that. But they're the people that I and anybody who's been involved with the centre with, they're the people we've learned the most from. The centre is survivor-centred, so we're led and said by what our clients tell us, what they need, what we can hope to provide for them. And obviously, while it's very, I suppose, heavy and dark work in terms of we hear some of the worst that one human being can do to another, but we also hear some of the best that human beings are in terms of how they manage to heal, how they manage to recover, the very often huge understanding and kindnesses they show in that. And just seeing people being able to move on in their lives, being able to eventually even move past the piece of being a survivor to where they're just moving on to living their lives. So I'd say, yeah, it's going to be very strange living without all that, if you know what I mean. But also, I suppose a lot of things have changed, as you'd be well aware, in all the sectors. And I suppose for me, I feel that now the centre needs somebody new and somebody different to lead it forward into the next phase of whatever's coming.
Just on that, you were telling me off air, you're living up in Gray Cullen. Mm-hmm. You travel down by bus and every day, and fair play to you for using the public transport. Have you any plans? What are you going to do?
Well, first thing I'm going to do is take a couple of months off and do nothing. And then I suppose I have small plans in terms of doing a bit of travel. One of the things I've always wanted to do is get a dog, because we always had them growing up and I just haven't been able to because I'm out of the house too much. So that's one thing I'd love to do. And then it's a matter of looking around, and I've always done voluntary work of some kind, so I'll do more of that, and then look around and see what's out there.
You use the word survivor rather than the word victim.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I've covered a lot of abuse stories over the years in my previous job and in this job. Is it bad if I use the word victim?
No, no. I mean, because I think victim is a difficult word for people, in the same way that, for example, rape is a very difficult word for our clients to use when they come in initially anyway, because none of us like to think of ourselves as victims, and we don't like to. It's very hard to accept that I have been that for our clients that they have been victimized in that particular way, because obviously sexual violence is such a personal violation. Survivor, I suppose, is denotes that they have maybe moved on. I mean, in the first instance, they've survived the sexual violence, and that's a huge thing. So I think that it's not wrong to use the word victim. I suppose survivor is a piece of, it's a bit, maybe they're a bit farther along on the path from that.
You prefer the word survivor?
I would use them mostly interchangeably, but I suppose depending, survivor maybe has more hope for them.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And what I would say to people is, look, you've survived what happened to you.
Of course, yeah.
That's a huge achievement in and of itself. And now the time is maybe to survive in a different way.
Yeah.
And look to what the future might bring for you.
Yeah. How have things changed in the last 30 years? Has violence got worse? Is there any explanation that you have come to, rational or otherwise, of why? And we're talking about different types of violence, obviously, different levels of violence. And I know people come to you, men come to you as well, mm-hmm. as well as women. And we have the Men's Development Network, and mm-hmm. we do things with them as well. But why do people do these things to other people?
It's a good question, and it's one that's often asked. And I think there's confusion about it, because rape and sexual assault are very often looked on as being sexual crimes. And there obviously is a sexual element to it. But what they are about essentially.
And again, we should have given a sort of a little warning before this in terms of the topics we're talking about. We're not going to go into too much details or anything like that, but a little warning in terms of anybody who's listening.
But what they are essentially about is power and dominance. So it's about one person having the power and control over another person, and having that in one of the most intimate and personal ways that it's possible to have. And that can arise. I mean, obviously, we don't work with abusers, but there are various different reasons, motivations, and their lives maybe have gone in a particular way that causes them to decide to take this path. But yeah, essentially, and I think that's that people look on it as, I think that that thinking is changing. And I mean, obviously we changed our thinking on that. We are a feminist organisation. We see rape and sexual abuse as very much being a gendered crime, in that the majority of the time it's perpetrated by men against women. Yeah. Now, that's not, I mean, the vast majority of men are decent, you know, human beings who wouldn't dream of doing this. Yeah. But the fact remains that it is mostly men yeah. perpetrating it. And so that's the piece about the patriarchy, the culture in which we live, the societal conditioning that has happened that assigns certain roles and behaviours to men and women. All of that feeds into it. And all of that is changing, I think. Now, I think what we're seeing at the moment is maybe a backlash against a lot of different movements, against feminism, maybe against LGBTQI, against trans. But I think human nature seems to be that that inevitably happens. When movements really start to grow and gain momentum and really start to push change, I think inevitably there is a backlash, because what change causes is fear and anxiety amongst people who maybe are maybe not even necessarily happy with the way things are, but understand, you know, it's that bit of what's familiar is safe, regardless of whether it is actually safe or not. And I think that's what's happening. Huge change has happened in terms of when I started out in the centre, sexual abuse was still very much taboo. And then, as you know, in the 90s was when the States of Fear documentaries, for example, were broadcast, and a whole different understanding of the dynamics of sexual violence started to come to light. So our thinking on it has changed. It's much, much more reported in the media now. It's reported in very different ways. And there's much more understanding of it. The laws have changed. Policy at a national level has changed. I mean, like I said, now we have an agency called COON, which is set up specifically to provide the government response to domestic, sexual and gender-based violence. And that's massive.
So there have been some changes for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And yourselves, and I know you also have been chair of the Rape Crisis Network in Ireland mm-hmm. for two terms over the years. You've been part of that change and responsible for a lot of that change. So well done to you and your colleagues in relation to that.
Thank you.
Because I presume there's lots of times you'd feel like banging your head and you're going, we're trying to do this. The frustration there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think and that frustration is very much obviously there for survivors as well. And maybe particularly for survivors who engage with the criminal justice process. So who make a statement and try to have it proceed to trial. Because our laws, I mean, while they have changed, a lot more needs to happen there. And our criminal justice system can be a difficult one for survivors to navigate, which is part of the reason why we're so involved with it as well. Now, again, in terms of, say, we look at the Gardaí. On Garda Síochána have been very proactive in changing how they work with survivors of sexual violence and domestic abuse particularly. So now they have the protective services units, where it's a dedicated team who work solely and purely with this. So that's been a huge positive for survivors. But like I said, I think a lot more needs to happen. The resources have hugely improved, obviously. Again, I always see more that needs to happen. And while I think we may well be ahead of our counterparts in many parts of Europe, we still see the possibilities. We see what could be happening for survivors, and we will continue to work and push for all of that.
What do you have to say to somebody who's out there who is suffering abuse now and hasn't yet reported it? And also, what would you have to say to those that have reported it and are on their recovery journey? I'm not going to talk about the perpetrators. I just don't want this interview to end with them. I want to talk about the survivors.
What I would say to them is, you don't have to carry this alone. What I would say to them is, you pick up the phone, send an email, send a text to your local rape crisis centre. There are 16 centres throughout Ireland. So wherever you are. I would say that I understand that it's hugely fearful to break the silence on abuse. I would also say that a lot of the power that abuse has lies in the silence and secrecy that surrounds it. So just even take that first step of reaching out, however tentative that might be, just ask, is there help? You don't have to give any identifying details if you don't wish. You can do this anonymously. Test the water for yourself. You know, take it one little step at a time. If you choose to report to the Gardaí, that's entirely up to you. We'll support you whether you're doing that or not. We'll talk through all of that. People very often have huge fears around confidentiality. We'll talk all of that through with you ever before you tell us anything about yourself. And I'd say the same to people who have somebody in their family or in their group of friends that they know has suffered sexual violence again. Reach out. You don't have to carry this alone because it is very big. It's huge. And help is there. And I understand that it is, I mean, people are so afraid of saying it. And part of that is that people have tucked it away in the back of their minds as best they could, maybe for years, maybe for decades. And that's how they've survived. But there is a different way. And I'm not saying that's an easy journey either. It's not an easy path, but there is another way to do that. And maybe now is the time to think about handing the pain and handing the blame back to the person who actually caused it and starting to forge a better life for yourself.
What's your number?
Our number is 1-800-296-296. We have a text line, which is 087-223-3730, or you can email us at info@waterfordrsac.ie.
We'll give out all those details again. Well done.
Thank you.
I don't know how you do it. I have a close relative who's a therapist, and there was a special mention at the Golden Globes the other night. One of the people receiving an award said a special hello to all the therapists out there. I don't know how you do it.
It sounds a bit of a cliche, but quite honestly, I've gotten far more out of it than I've put into it. I mean, to see somebody come through such a horrendous experience, but then come through the pain that it has caused and all of the feelings that it caused, the confusion, the anxiety, the depression, and to see them come through that and begin to be able to let it go little bit by little bit is just tremendous, Damien, you know. And it really has been a privilege that people have chosen to trust us over the years. And we're very aware of that and we're very careful of that because that's very precious.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your help here with the programme. I know Jennifer wants to thank you as well, and our listeners have thanked us anytime you've been on the programme. Thanks for all your cooperation with WR and your understanding of how the media works. And I think that's been very good. And obviously you've been talking to Billy over the years and then with Eamon and myself and Maria. So genuinely, thank you so much. That's really, really important. And the very best of luck with everything.
Thank you. Also like to say thank you to WLR and to you and your predecessors for airing this subject and for always touching in with us around it, you know, and being responsive when we've wanted to talk about a particular thing. So thank you.
Not at all. And don't be a stranger, please, after your trip to wherever you go, up the mountains in Nepal or whatever the case is. Let us know how you get on and keep in touch, okay?
Thanks, Damien.
And Scully, thank you.